Welcome to the Food Matters Live podcast, where we showcase the innovations, the big ideas, and the visionaries in the food industry. We dig deep, we look to the future and the past, and we question everything we think we know about food. I'm Anthony Zara, and this episode was recorded live at the Food Matters Live event held in Manchester in May 2025. Today, we're asking, is gut health still a top priority for consumers? We know that awareness continues to rise, but there's evidence that fewer people are actually taking action when it comes to their diets. And if that is the case, how does the gut health conversation need to evolve to remain relevant to consumers?
First, we'll hear from Mike Hughes, and he's Head of Research and Insight at FMCG Gurus, who will be unpacking the latest consumer data to reveal how interest in gut health is really evolving and what that means for brands and for product development. Then we're joined by Tanya Harrison. She's a registered nutritionist and founder of the Menopause Larder, and she'll spotlight the vital and growing conversation around gut health and the menopause and what this means for really targeted and functional innovation for that consumer group. So firstly, please join me in welcoming Mike to the stage. Thanks, Mike.
My name is Mike Hughes, and I am Head of Research and Insights at FMCG Gurus. So insights into consumer appetite for gut health. First, we're going to look at awareness of the gut microbiome and how it's grown in recent years, why that is. We're going to look at the prevalence of digestive health problems across the globe and how digestive health is one of the biggest concerns that consumers have. We're going to look at what actions consumers are taking to address their digestive health, but how changing priorities in an era of uncertainty means we kind of need to move the narrative along from making gut health just synonymous with disease management to actually addressing wider areas such as sleep health, mood enhancement, and energy levels. So to start off with, over the last 10 years, consumers have reevaluated their attitude to digestive health considerably. You know, we used to associate poor digestive health with, something of a social taboo that wasn't discussed, feelings of embarrassment, uncomfortableness. But we've actually kind of recognized now that, you know, consumers recognize the link between digestive health and overall wellness, you know, and they take their digestive health seriously. We've seen this through the mainstream evolution of probiotics, you know, and messages around the importance of loving the gut. And in recent years, you know, the phrase the gut microbiome has become more common. I mean, I first heard this in presentations during the COVID era, and we've seen it now gain into mass society. We asked consumers in 2022 if they were aware of the phrase the gut microbiome, and I think it was 15% of consumers said they had. Fast forward 2 years, that's jumped to 40%. And I think the reason for that is, you know, we're seeing it more and more on new product development. We're seeing it on advertising, and we're seeing influencers talk about it more. So it's becoming more in mainstream society. Even if consumers, you know, don't recognize the phrase, the gut microbiome, they recognize the importance of beneficial bacteria in the gut. So even if they don't know the terminology, they know the principle. And you know, there's been a slight drop off in the proportion of consumers unaware of the gut microbiome who said that, but that needs to be taken into the context of a huge surge in people who, you know, are aware of the gut microbiome. And positively, consumers are making changes to their diets and lifestyles because of increased awareness of the gut microbiome. So they are acting on this. However, we know that consumers aren't satisfied with their digestive health. You know, research that we did last year shows only around 1 in 2 consumers are satisfied with their digestive health. From a health perspective, digestive health is the biggest concern that consumers have. And the reason for this is that symptoms are quite common. You know, consumers are prone to suffering from gas, constipation. We know that irritable bowel syndrome is on the rise. We know that allergies and intolerances are on the rise. And this is having an impact on consumer attitudes, behaviors, and the impact of their lives day to day, you know. And we know that often this is something that's self-inflicted. You know, consumers admit that many digestive health problems are self-inflicted. They don't have a diet as healthy as they should be, so they don't monitor their nutritional intake. They don't have structured diet plans. They're prone to overindulging. They can often eat late at night, which impacts on their sleep health. We also know with lifestyles such as inactivity can, you know, indirectly impact on digestive health. And when we factor in other things such as an aging society where digestive health problems tend to become more common, and also wider issues such as rising temperatures because of climate change, and we have some clients that work around heat-induced diarrhea. We know that actually, you know, digestive health problems are going to become more and more common. So we're going to find this tipping point where consumers are more savvy and more aware about digestive health than ever, but at the same time are more prone to suffering symptoms. Now, we know that consumers are taking steps to address their digestive health. Firstly, it's worth saying that they're more likely to be making changes to their diets and lifestyles as opposed to seeking out professional advice from healthcare professionals, indicating that consumers recognise that some of these problems are self-inflicted. Consumers are most likely to turn to probiotics. Often these are consumers who we would say more casual buyers. They will turn to dairy because they know that they can pick up a yogurt and it says probiotic on it, or at least in places where there's no regulation. Even in the countries where there's regulation, they feel that they can still identify a probiotic. Awareness of prebiotics and purchasing is still on the rise. However, what we would say is that many consumers don't recognize the difference between probiotics, prebiotics, and certainly not postbiotics. So they may often feel that they need one rather than the other. They don't understand the different roles that they play, and they're still more likely to purchase a prebiotic if it's an additional claim on a probiotic as opposed to purchasing within their own right. But nevertheless, consumers are turning to biotics more frequently. We know that consumers are also seeking out high fiber products. One of the things that we're talking about with our clients and what we think will be a big thing over the next decade is making fiber more aspirational, taking lessons from protein, because actually consumers have enough protein in their diets, but they don't have enough fiber. But the problem is consumers tend to think of fiber as bland and boring. And I don't think the industry's done a particularly good job in helping reverse those attitudes. And actually, they've kind of confounded them in recent years. So we know consumers are making changes. We know that consumers say that rising prices are something that will impact on their ability to lead a healthier diet, which means purchasing of wellness products will be more considered. So it means irrespective of whether you're leading with a product, a benefit, or an ingredient, scientific evidence to validate those claims is something that's important. We also ask consumers in what product categories do they like to see claims around digestive health. Dairy, unsurprisingly, was the most popular, which is due to the link with probiotics. But it also shows that irrespective of some of the concerns that consumers have had in recent years around dairy because of fats and calorie content, consumers see it as something that can have a beneficial impact on the diet. And we often tend to see that when it comes to things like flexitarianism, there's a greater emphasis on eliminating meat reduction as opposed to dairy. There's some consumers who are willing to switch between dairy and non-dairy based off occasion and need state. But dairy is going to be the key area of innovation. There is some opportunity around plant-based that we've seen. You know, consumers can lack some can have some concern about the nutritional value of plant-based, but nevertheless, they do like to see some digestive health claims in there. Breakfast items. And this is also a popular area. And this is for two reasons. One, the association with fiber, particularly when it comes to bread and cereal. But again, because consumers tend to be more health orientated in the morning. So when targeting these occasions, you know, we would say dairy, high fiber products and morning are those occasions where digestive health claims are going to be more influential. But again, irrespective of which occasion you're targeting, those scientific evidence is needed to validate claims. Now, we focus there on a lot about digestive health, but one of the things that we've seen at FMCG Gurus over the last year or so is that consumers are changing their priorities when it comes to health and wellness. Fear of illness has dropped considerably compared to a couple of years ago because the pandemic is now a legacy. There's also been a drop-off in proactive health and what I would say the normalization of the health and wellness market. Consumers feel that barriers to healthy living are on the rise, such as affordability, time scarcity, and stress. And they can only focus on a certain amount of things during the day. The reality is that consumers are stressed, they're worried, they're burnt out. They turn on the TV and there's constant negative information, you know, the threat of war and conflict, you know, rising prices, change in political landscapes, etc. You know, and that's something that influences their attitudes to health and wellness. And we've seen this focus away from long-term health to actually day-to-day health. We ask consumers, you know, what their priorities are when it comes to addressing health over the next few years. We've seen earlier, consumers recognize the link with digestive health. It's their biggest health concern. They're prone to suffering symptoms. They buy into the science around the gut microbiome. But there's been a drop in the proportion of consumers who are looking to address it. it's not because they feel it's improved. It's because they can only prioritize certain amount of things. We're human beings. We're not robots. Consumers are focused on things such as their energy levels. They're feeling constantly tired and fatigued. They're focusing on their mental well-being. You know, they're putting greater emphasis on the basic principles of happiness. And, you know, we know that consumers are concerned about their weight. You know, they feel that they're gaining weight because of comfort eating, the trade-off between affordability and nutrition, poorly structured dietary habits. And as a result of this, consumers are focusing on those issues at the expense of digestive health, which means we need to reposition the message away, as discussed, from disease management, immunity, to actually saying, how can the digestive system address those day-to-day quality of life aspects? I mentioned probiotics before and prebiotics, and consumers will say, yeah, we recognize it with digestive health and immune health. But when you say, do you recognize the link between energy, weight management, skin health? They don't. And that's a real opportunity for the market over the next couple of years. So just to give you some figures, you know, 21% of global consumers associate good mood levels with having a positive impact on digestive health. 27% associate good energy levels with having an impact on digestive health. And 24% associate low stress levels with having a positive impact on digestive health. Just to give you another figure there, we ran some research last year on prebiotics, and we asked consumers, how do you measure the efficacy of prebiotics? Because we know efficacy is more important than ever at a time when spending is considered. And they said, well, actually, after the obvious answer of regular bowel movements, energy levels, how fit and active we are. You know, we evaluate our health based off what we see in the mirror, how we feel, you know, and as a result of that, we need to be making the link between the gut microbiome and actually saying it's something that can help you reduce stress. It's something that can enhance your moods, and it's something that can boost your energy levels. Now, one area that I want to cover on is one of the big issues for consumers at the moment is energy. Consumers are prone to feeling tired and fatigued. They're in this vicious circle. They wake up feeling tired. They struggle to get through the day to perform a task to their best of ability. That's physically, cognitively, emotionally. They get home. They struggle to switch off. Some of that can be self-inflicted because of digital dependency. They go to bed late. They can't sleep well because they're worried about certain things whilst blue light is impacting them. They wake up in the morning feeling tired, and it's repeat and repeat and repeat. And they want to break this vicious cycle. What consumers have also done is reevaluated their attitudes towards energy and said, hey, you know what? This isn't just about me feeling a little bit burnt out and I need a few early nights, or, you know, stop going out at the weekends. Consumers are saying, actually, my energy levels may reflect my overall health, which means that greater emphasis is being placed on boosting energy levels. And there's a greater level of awareness and, an appeal of ingredients, food, drink, supplements that help boost energy levels. At the same time, consumers are concerned about traditional energy boosting products. You know, there's still legacy issues around energy products that follow that short-term high versus crash and burn model, particularly amongst older consumers. And there's that also concern about ingredients such as sugar, taurine, to get that energy kick. So as a result of this, one of the things that we're saying to our clients at the moment is enhance, make that link between digestive health and energy. Make it more aspirational. Say it's not just about disease management and longevity, because in an era of normalized health and wellness, it's very difficult for consumers to think about their long-term health every day. But make it relevant. Make the link with energy and say, hey, by addressing digestive health, you can offer this safe and sustained energy boost, either through ingredients such as fiber, probiotics, prebiotics, or anything that we know offer this safe and sustained energy boost, that it isn't a last resort solution, but something that can be incorporated into a daily diet. So to conclude, awareness of the gut microbiome is on the rise, as is awareness of beneficial bacteria in the gut. So even if consumers don't know the terminology, they know the principle, and I would actually say that's more important. Consumers recognize the importance of gut health and are prone to suffering symptoms. But because we're distracted and we've got a lot going on in life, we're just giving it less consideration compared to a couple of years earlier. Consumers can lack confusion around biotics. You know, consumers don't know the difference between a probiotic, a prebiotic, a postbiotic. They don't know the different roles that they play. And they don't know the wider health benefits outside immunity and digestive health. And then as for fiber, consumers recognize it and they think it's important, but they find it bland and boring. And the industry has done nothing to challenge that perception. Less focus on gut health can be attributed to less reduced fear of illness and change in priorities. And I think this is something that's really important to highlight. You know, consumers are still being proactive, But, you know, we're in a normalized environment now. You know, the kind of legacy issues of a few years ago have gone. You know, and I remember being at events when people said things will never be the same again. And it was like things will be exactly the same again in a couple of years. We won't take any long-term lessons from this. But nevertheless, it shows about that change in priority. And this means that the industry must emphasize the link between gut health and day-to-day emotional wellness, such as sleep, mood, energy levels. So that concludes my presentation for today. Thank you very much for listening.
Thank you, Mike. That's fantastic. In the meantime, I'm going to invite Tanya onto stage.
Yes, good morning, everyone. I'm Tanya Harrison, registered nutritionist and director and founder of the Menopause Ladder. And today, I want to speak about the interplay between gut health and menopause. Only, like my previous speaker, only 15 minutes. So as you can imagine, this is going to be a bit of a whistle-stop tour, really. So I want to touch very briefly on the hormonal changes that we undergo during the menopause transition and how estrogen and the microbiome are interlinked, what exactly happened with regards to the microbiome during the menopause and transition. And obviously, being a nutritionist, I will also touch on some nutritional strategies that we could potentially use. Okay, I'm pretty sure at least those of you who are familiar with the topic of menopause will have seen this particular slide or at least a version of it before. So during the menopause and in the years leading up to the menopause, so 12 months of not having a period, we see that there are fluctuations in the levels of progesterone and estrogen, and then post-menopause, so for the rest of our lives, we find this flat line of estrogen and progesterone levels. However, what most people are not aware of, that the type of estrogen actually changes when we compare the premenopausal years with the postmenopause years. So during the premenopause, and also as we are going through the perimenopause, as we are experiencing or starting to experiencing those fluctuations, it's actually the estrogen estradiol that is the dominant estrogen that is being secreted mainly from our ovaries. As we go through the perimenopause, reach that point of menopause, and then are in postmenopause for the remainder of our years, it's actually the estrogen called estrone that is the predominant type of estrogen. And that is mainly secreted from adipose tissue and the adrenal glands. Why is that important? Well, estrone, so E1, is not as potent as estradiol, so it doesn't have as strong an effect on our bodies. And that is why many of the symptoms that women will experience as they go through the perimenopause, that is why those symptoms arise, the two different types of estrogen and their potency. Obviously, we've already spoken briefly about microbiota, microbiome, but I just wanted to highlight that we tend to use those terms interchangeably, but there's actually a difference between microbiota and the microbiome. So microbiota are the organisms that reside, in this case, within our human gut. And whilst we tend to focus on the bacteria that are resident in our gut, there's actually also a wide range of other microorganisms. We just don't have enough research out there just yet to give us an indication what their importance might be. When we talk about the microbiome, we talk about the microbiota and the surrounding environment, which includes the host. And I don't know whether you've come across this particular representation before. I quite like this diagram by Berg and colleagues because, yeah, again, we've got the microbiota over there, so the microorganisms resident in our gut. But Burke and colleagues also then talk about the theatre of activity. And so that refers to what else is going on in the gut. How is the, how's the overall status, the environmental conditions of the host? How are nutrients, how are metabolites, other DNA from the residents in our gut? All this is having an impact, and all this makes up the whole of the microbiome. And within the microbiome, it's the estrobilome that is really, really important when we talk about health and menopause. And what is the estrobilome? That is the those are the good microbiota that have functions that are related to estrogen. So estradiol, estrone, when it comes to menopause and the menopause transition. So, and what's really, really important in this context is that the microbiota themselves, they can express very specific enzymes that then interact with the estrogens in our body. When we think about the journey of estrogen, so whether that's estradiol or estrone throughout our body, it's really, really important to highlight that when those estrogens are first secreted, whether that's from the ovaries, adipose tissues, or adrenal glands, they are highly bioavailable within our bloodstream, unless until they reach the liver, where they get conjugated and they're no longer bioavailable for us then. From there, they can either be excreted through the urine or they make their way into the human gut. And that is where the composition of our microbiome and the type of microbiota residing within the microbiome is really important, because those microbiota that have the ability to express certain enzymes can actually then help to make the estrogen bioavailable again, because they deconjugate them and it makes the and move them back into the bloodstream, which means from a perspective of having a positive impact of estrogen, so losing that estrogen throughout the menopausal transition, we have better availability. So therefore, the estrobilome is a really, really important what we call a prime regulator of estrogen metabolism. So it's really, really important to then have an understanding of what resides in our gut basically, and will those microbiota have a positive impact on systemic estrogen levels. So from what we know from research so far, there are actually a wide variety of different families of microbiota that do express those enzymes that can make estrogen bioavailable for us again. The Bacteroidetes is one phyla, so one category of microbiota that can play a really important role here. And also they are predominantly resident in the human gut. However, as always with the microbiome, it very much depends on other factors by the host, so gender, age, diet, and other lifestyle factors. We do know that those individuals who have a greater abundance and diversity of different types of microbiota in their gut also have a higher expression of those enzymes that then make the estrogen bioavailable to us again. So from the perspective of a woman going through the menopause and having that decline in endogenous estrogen levels, this can actually be an advantage. And we do find that there is somewhat of a positive feedback loop. So there's a bidirectional relationship between the microbiota and the estrogen. So we know that estrogen is can serve as a substrate for the microbiota, and that then leads to an increased diversity and abundance in the human gut. And then leading on from there, obviously, I've just mentioned before, increased biodiversity and abundance then helps us to get the estrogen back into our system and make that bioavailable for us again. However, there has been some research looking at what is actually happening during the menopause transition. A lot of that is still in its infancy. The quality of the studies could potentially be improved. We have a lot of data from studies undertaken in animal models, in cell cultures. We do have, obviously, studies that have been undertaken in women going through the menopause transition, but they're mainly observational studies, and the studies of higher quality, such as the random randomized controlled trials, have very, very low, don't have that many participants, basically. So there's still some work to be done. So, but what we know so far is that as women go through the menopause, we find that their microbiome is less diverse. There is a lesser abundance of microbiota. So what that means as well, therefore, there are less availability of the enzymes that I mentioned that lead to higher bioavailability of estrogen. And studies have found that, therefore, when we compare women, when we compare premenopausal women with men, and postmenopausal women, that postmenopausal women actually present with a microbiome that is more similar to men in their same age category. So you could say it's their microbiome somewhat becomes more masculine. We also find that there is less presence or less abundance of beneficial microbiota, and there's an increase of microbiota that we think could potentially be harmful. And one of the reasons behind that is because we think that estradiol, so the estrogen that is predominant in premenopause that we're starting to lose as we're going through perimenopause, is somewhat protective against presenting with harmful bacteria. Another thing that has also been observed is that with estrone becoming the main type of estrogen in postmenopause, there is also a greater abundance of bacteria, of microbiota, that are somewhat linked to estrone. And that's probably because estrone can serve as a substrate feeding those particular species. And there have been studies, again, in animal models that show us that if estradiol, so the premenopause estrogen, is supplemented, that that can somewhat be managed, and that can be ameliorated. But as far as I know, that hasn't been, as you know, those studies haven't been undertaken in women yet. So overall, that is the reason we think that during the menopause transition and in our postmenopause years, we tend to have higher risk of cardiovascular disease, osteoporosis, cognitive disorders. And we think that this is there's a really strong link between the estrobolome, the microbiome, and what is happening to women and their health after menopause. So what can we do from a nutritional perspective? So first of all, we can try and find strategies to increase the diversity and abundance of those beneficial players in the microbiome. So try and find substrates that help those beneficial microbiota to get the estrogen back into the system. So fiber-rich foods, foods containing polyphenols, I've mentioned prebiotics and probiotics earlier on, and all these can be found in diets that place a great emphasis on plant-based foods. So whether that's Mediterranean diet, Nordic diet, DASH diet, having that abundance and diversity of different types of plant-based foods can really, really be beneficial for the microbiome, and hopefully then feed the estrobilome as well. Another thing that we could do is we could try and get estrogen more directly into the system through dietary means, through phytoestrogens, so plant-based estrogens. And there are different types or different categories of estrogens, as you can see on the slide, and my slides will be shared after the session as well. But two where we have the most evidence, really, in terms of having a beneficial effect on both the microbiome and on symptoms of menopause and health past menopause, are isoflavonoids and lignans. There is one caveat, though. So the isoflavonoids, for example, can be found in foods such as soybeans or soy-based foods, tofu, tempeh, miso. Not everyone can actually make the best use of those foods. And again, that has to do with the composition of their microbiome. So one of the phytoestrogens that is contained in soybeans can be turned into a really important metabolite in the human gut, equal or S equal. You will see both references in the literature, but only if there are specific types of bacteria residing in the human gut. So currently we have 21 potential candidates of those beneficial bacteria, so those strains that help us produce that beneficial metabolite. But in Western populations, only 25 to 30% actually seem to be equal producers. The prevalence is far higher in Asian countries. And we think that maybe that is the reason as well that soy products, which are obviously consumed in higher quantities and frequencies in Asian countries, then have a really positive impact on health during and post-menopause. We also have some evidence that both vegetarians and people who consume seaweed and good amounts of dairy also turn into equal producers. So there are some strategies that we can think of to try and connect all the different dots. So in summary then, the estrobilome is a really important part when it comes to good health, when it comes to menopause health, for the reasons that I've briefly explained. There's a lot that we don't know yet, but it's a really, really exciting area of research. And this could be, focusing on the estrobilome and the microbiota within the that make up the estrobilome might be a really, really good strategy to help us be, you know, healthier during the menopause, but also in our postmenopausal years. So we can try and increase the diversity, abundance of those specific bacteria, or we can try and go in more targeted by focusing on phytoestrogens as well. And like I mentioned, the research is in its infancy, so there's a lot more that we can do there. Thank you very much.